This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick.
The people who ran, did Sunday schools, the people who did the Thursday night meals, the people who played the music, any type of act that they were doing in the church, there was somebody lost in almost every aspect.
Sutherland Springs, Texas. We will now add this tiny town, almost an hour east of San Antonio, to the long list of places across the country, large and small, that we now recognize by name as the site of a shooting massacre. The details in Sutherland Springs are horrifyingly familiar. Around 11:30 on Sunday morning, a lone gunman, dressed in all black, carrying a semi-automatic AR-15-style rifle, walked into the tiny First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs. About 60 congregants were gathered inside for Sunday services. The gunman opened fire. 26 people were killed, including children and a pregnant woman. The victims, as old as 77, as young as 18 months old. At least 20 people were wounded. Officials have identified the suspect as Devin Kelly, a 26-year-old white man from nearby Comal County. He was found dead by a gunshot wound in a neighboring county after fleeing the scene in a car. Officials have not discussed any apparent racial or political motive. Lauren McGaughey is the state politics reporter for the Dallas Morning News. She's in Sutherland Springs. Lauren, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Lauren, I mentioned that the victims range from 77 years old down to an 18-month-old child, and we heard from one of the people in the town at the top that these killings included people with roles in every aspect of life, both in the town and in the church. Do we have a better sense of who the victims were?
We're starting to. There haven't been a lot of official confirmations of who these victims are, but I spent the day yesterday with the Ward family. Just happened to walk up to them when they were standing outside of their home, which is about two blocks from the church. And they were waiting on news from four family members who were inside the church for morning services. I met up with them at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And by about 11 o'clock at night, they had found out that three of their family members had died. This did include a five-year-old girl named Brooke Ward, and a seven-year-old girl named Emily Garza. These were cousins, nieces, and nephews of the Ward family. And the mother of those two children was also dead. So, I mean, there's stories of one family that lost someone from three generations, possibly up to eight members of that family. That's the Holcomb family. And when I was speaking to members of the community yesterday, just standing on the street, they said, you know, this community, you know the families, you know the Holcombs, you know the Wards. You, when you're in the church, when you're outside of the church, everyone knows each other. It's only about 600 people, a little bit north of 600 people live in this community. So if 26 died, you can imagine that's, you know, almost 4 or 5% of the people that live in town. So absolutely everyone has been touched by this in a very intimate way. And it's just terrible to see it unfold and to see people waiting on news and unfortunately, more often than not, getting bad news.
Lauren, the suspect here, a 26-year-old man, Devin Kelly, what do we know about him? We're hearing reports that his in-laws may have attended this very church.
That's right, Todd. The reports are that the sheriff confirmed that Devin Kelly's in-laws did attend First Baptist Church. They were not there. That is the reports that we're hearing now. But that would obviously make a very direct link between this young man and the church that he allegedly shot at. What we know about him as well is obviously he was very young. He had been in the military, in the Air Force. He received a bad conduct mischarge, actually, in I believe it was 2014, stemming from issues with domestic violence. He lived in New Braunfels, as far as we know, which is a bit of a drive from here. You know, it's not right down the street. It's a suburb of San Antonio, which is a good 20, 30 miles away. And obviously, we've been trying to reach out to his family, to his wife. He has a young wife and a handful of young children. We've been trying to locate them to ensure their safety, which so far we have been unable to do.
Lauren, the suspect, Devin Kelly, is dead. I want to ask you about the circumstances of that, but here's some sound from local resident Johnny Langendorf, who pursued the suspect after the shooting.
I pulled up to the intersection where the shooting happened, and I saw two men exchanging gunfire, the other being a citizen of the community. And The shooter of the church had taken off, fled in his vehicle, and the other gentleman came and he said we needed to pursue him, that he just shot up the church. And so that's what I did. I just acted and got him off the road. And
okay.
That sound courtesy of KSAT Television Channel 12. Lauren, that citizen is describing pursuing the suspect in his car, a chase that went to the next county.
Yeah. So Johnny Langendorf and another individual who we haven't actually been able to identify at this time did pursue Devin Kelly. It sounds like a pretty harrowing chase. At one point, they said they were going about 95 miles an hour down Highway 87. Mr. Kelly did crash, and when the police found him in the car, he was dead. So it's unclear whether one of these members of town, one of the individuals, actually shot Kelly, and then Kelly got into his car and drove and crashed, or whether the fatal wound to Kelly was self-inflicted. At this point, we're kind of waiting for that information. But Mr. Kelly is dead at this time, and so that, you know, obviously closes up the opportunity to understand more immediately why he did this and what his motives were.
Lauren McGaughey, Dallas Morning News. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
As a state, we are dealing with the largest mass shooting in our state's history. There's so many families who've lost family members, fathers, mothers, sons, and daughters. The tragedy, of course, is worsened by the fact that it occurred in a church, a place of worship, where these people were innocently gunned down.
Texas Governor Greg Abbott there. Details on the tragic shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas, continue to emerge. As law enforcement and citizens and observers continue to try to piece together this tragedy, Fred Burton is a national security analyst and vice president of intelligence with the intelligence firm Stratfor, based in Austin, Texas. Fred Burton, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Todd.
Fred, how do you begin to interpret a shooting like this on a vulnerable population in a church on a Sunday?
Well, when you look at this kind of attack, and it unfolded yesterday when I was driving back from College Station, Texas, back to Austin, you pass several churches just like this one. So when you look at this from a soft target perspective, you have to keep that in mind and recognize fully that it's impossible for law enforcement authorities to be able to protect all of them. So it boils down to each and every church, to include the little ones like this one, to have a plan in place, and also to think about having some off-duty deputies there or attending the congregation.
Fred, you are talking about a term that people like you use all the time, situational awareness. People aren't used to having situational awareness in a town of 600 when they go to church on a Sunday.
No, they're not, Todd, but in essence, this is the new norm in America. You can look at the entertainment venue in Las Vegas as an example of the unexpected. The vehicle ramming attack in New York City is things that, as you move away from the East Coast, folks kind of expect those things to occur in big cities. But you don't expect these kinds of events to occur in these small little churches. But it's the kind of shift, Todd, that we really need to start thinking about as a nation. And literally, the citizens need to think about how they would respond to an event like this if it unfolded in front of them.
What will authorities be thinking about now as they try to piece together motive, background of the suspect, whether he had personal grievances or political or a mixture of both?
Well, there will always be motive, Todd. In every investigation or attack that I've ever looked into, there's always motive. So there will be motive here. Now, it might not make sense to you and I, but he had a very specific reason for targeting that church. On a practical level, I would want to be looking at the attack cycle. For example, when did he start planning this attack? Did he message this to anybody close to him, whether that be his wife or other family members or friends? The other interesting aspect is he appeared to work as a security officer at a large water park, which is pretty close to Austin, Texas, in between Austin and San Antonio. So the investigators will be pulling his employment records and, in essence, reconstructing his entire life.
Texas is a place, of course, where gun rights are a closely guarded part of the culture. That's no surprise. Yet again, we have a semi-automatic AR-15, apparently, as the weapon of choice here. Is that important to investigators, or is that more important as people piece together the aftermath?
It will be factored into the investigation. It's my understanding it was a Ruger AR-556, probably of the semi-automatic variant, which you can buy anywhere in Texas on any given day. I thought it was amazing, the citizen response, the neighbor that saw this unfold and actually went and got his gun and started shooting at the bad guy. Which resulted in the suspect dropping the weapon and fleeing, and then a couple other folks chasing after him. So it's really an amazing story, something out of the wild, wild west.
So, Fred Burton, as people begin to piece together the potential motives of the shooter, it does inevitably remind us of Las Vegas just a little over a month ago, where investigators there apparently have come up with very few, if any, details about the motivation and planning of the shooter there.
It is. It's fascinating that in the Las Vegas case, they during the autopsy, they shipped the brain off to Stanford for further examination, which tells me they're looking at some degree of pathology. In this case, if I was part of this investigation, I would be wanting to know from a blood alcohol content and toxicology. You want to look at that to see what kind of meds perhaps this shooter was on to kind of factor into the equation too. As bad as these things are, Todd, there's a lot of lessons learned for law enforcement after each and every one of these events, to include how better to protect locations such as this.
And Fred, let's end it there, because you began by talking about soft targets across this country. Even if this disturbing need for situational awareness is required in places like tiny churches, there are tens of thousands of them across this country. Getting a security guard for each one just isn't going to be possible.
No, it's not, but it's certainly very possible for those attending these kinds of events to be prepared, think about what they would do to protect themselves and their family. To be blunt, it's incumbent upon the host, the venue, the location, your workplace, to have a plan and to train.
A new normal in America, says Fred Burton, Vice President of Intelligence with Stratfor. Fred, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Todd.
Hi, this is Pete from New Jersey. The NRA propaganda campaign has convinced many Americans of a lie, the lie that the Second Amendment is unlimited. No right is unlimited. You can't yell fire in a crowded theater, then hide behind the First Amendment. Yesterday, it was a crowded church. A killer took an AR-15 to.
My name is Isabel. I'm calling from Portland, Oregon. I appreciated the interview with Fred Burton, but I'm confused about why citizens reacting to gun violence by protecting themselves has to be the only new norm in America. It seems like there are other solutions. Situational awareness might be one, but stricter gun laws are another. I think that could be another new norm for us.
Your voice in reaction to the shooting and the massacre in Sutherland Springs, Texas. You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. You can always leave a message on our Facebook page or reach us on Twitter.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Babbel, a language app that teaches real-life conversations in a new language like Spanish, French, and German. Babbel's 10 to 15-minute lessons are available in the App Store or online at Babbel, Babbel.com. LegalZoom.com, providing legal answers to the day-to-day questions of small business owners through its network of independent attorneys, available nationwide. More information at LegalZoom.com/takeaway. And Staples, offering print and marketing solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets and manuals, signage, and more. More at Staples Stores or Staples.com/print and marketing. Staples, it's pro time.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.